始めます。こんにちは。
こんにちは、
今週はゲスト会ということで、東京工業大学地球生命研究所の望月智博さんにお越しいただいています。イエイ。
ようこそ。
よろしくお願いします。
ようこそようこそ。あのさっき本当に初めてお会いしたばっかりで急に始めてるんですけど、あの今年の1月にアストロバイオロジーの論文をうちの番組で紹介させていただいて、あの地球以外の惑星や月にもウイルスが大量に存在する可能性があるよっていう話で、そこに望月さんのお名前が載っていて、まあ、勝手に望月智博さん来てくれないかなとか言ってたんだけど、ネットでメールアドレスを見つけたので、あのメールしたところ本当に来てくださったということで、ありがとうございます。
ありがとうございます。
あの1月の論文についてちょっとあのおさらいというか、もう教えていただきたいんですけど、
確かに私たち少しその宇宙にウイルス粒子がいるかもっていう話はしたんですけど、それが実はメイントピックではなかったんですよね。僕らの方がどっちかというと強調したかったのは、今地球上にたくさんあのウイルスっていうとすごくなんか危険なものっていうイメージがあると思うんですけど、そうではなくて微生物に感染するウイルスがすごくたくさんいて、であんまりそれらの役割ってこれまであまり注目されてなかったんですけども、うん、あの例えば生命の起源とか原始生命の初期進化とかを考える上で、実は彼らがすごく大きな役割をしてたんじゃないかっていうところがどっちかというとフォーカスでした。であとはあの実際地球上だとあの細胞よりもウイルスの方が大体少なくとも100倍以上存在してるって言われてるんで、うん、まあ、それだけ大量にある粒子でかつ小さいので、うん、あの何か例えば隕石の衝突とかがあった時にあの軽いので単純にふわふわ飛び出しやすいっていうこともありえるので、うん、あのもしかしたら月ぐらいの距離だったら地球から飛んできたウイルス粒子がもしかしたらそこに存在してるかもしれないし、うん、あとは、太陽系の中でも、例えばあのエンセラドゥスとか、エウロパとか、うん、そういう、他の天体、特にあの今注目されているのが惑星ではなくて衛星の方なんですけど、そういうところにもしかしたら生命がいるかもしれないって言われてて、もしそういうところに本当に生命がいるんだとしたらそこにもウイルスもいるかもねっていう感じで書いてました。
面白いよね。
If there are some life forms onEnceladus, for example, would the first life forms be something like viruses or not
that,
necessarily?
I think that goes down to the question of how you define life. And to be honest, we don't even know how life started on this planet. Mm-hmm. But this is sort of like my personal view. But the very, very first life formIt's kind of difficult to imagine that a cell just popped out from nowhere, because mm-hmm. even the most primitive cell on this modern Earth is still very, very complex. Mm-hmm. So out of just a mixture of organic materials and making directly into a cellular, complex cellular form, I think it's kind of difficult to imagine. Mm-hmm. So I think there was something intermediate with...some different particles doing different functions. And maybe one of those could be considered, if you break it down into modern criteria of defining cells or viruses, maybe it might be looking similar to viruses, but those are not something necessarily infecting other cells. Mm. So mm. it's really difficult to tell. But
would it be like self-assembling RNA or pre-RNA?
A lot of people believe that RNA probably did exist before life started. Mm. Because, so this goes down to the what's called the RNA world hypothesis, that a lot of people believe that life started having an RNA...as their genetic material. One, because RNA seems to be more easy to synthesize abiotically. Mm. And two, is that RNAs, not only they have function as a genetic material, but RNA can also have a function which is called the ribozyme. Mm. So the RNA itself can make something.
Right. That's what the virus uses inside the inside
roughly
cells,
roughly so. Half of the viruses still use RNA as their genomic molecule.
なんかそのウイルスの話になるといつもこうウイルスって生き物なのかそうじゃないのかで先ほど多分望月さんがおっしゃったそもそも生命の定義ってじゃあ何なんだろうっていう話になると思うんですけど望月さん的にウイルスは生物か無生物かでいうとどっちなんですかね。
あの その質問はすごいいい質問で本当に人によっては生き物っていう人もいるし人によってはもうあれは単なるナノマシンだっていう人もいるし、まあ、多分厳密に定義っていうことで考えると多分生き物ではないっていう方になってしまうと思うんですけども私自身は日々あの実験室でウイルスを培養してるんですね、
はい、
そうするとウイルスが生えたとかウイルスが死んじゃったとかって言っちゃったりもするんで限りなく生き物と感じながらやってます。その辺は人によって見方によって変わってくると思います。
生えたっていうんですね。
そうですね、増えたとか生えたとか。
It is something that it is a system or at least a process that maintains its complexity over time and replicates itself. It uses cells, but it's weird to think of something that does that and wouldn't be considered life, right?
Right. So for me, I think it's like a very much a living material, but it doesn't have the, basically it doesn't have a metabolism.
Right.
So it doesn't produce energy. Mm-hmm. It doesn't breathe. For example, if there is one cell on top of this table, and if you add the nutrients and proper temperature and all that, let's say after one day or something, that one cell would multiply into, I don't know, 10 or 100 cells.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have one viral particle here, and you add the nutrients and everything you can, and leave it, even if you leave it for 1 million years, it's just going to be one virus particle forever.
Right, right. Yeah, viruses are so weird. その、まあ人間でこれまで生きてきてウイルスに感染したことない人っていないと思うんですけど、その割にこうウイルスについて、まあ一般的にあんまりこう、なんだろう、みんな知らないっていうか。
多分病気の方はそれなりに知られてるのかなと思います。例えばインフルエンザだったりノロウイルスだったりとか、yeah, movies,
syphilis,
zombies,
Ebola、
right?
virus and all that、
right.
scary ones.
確かに。
Zombies are kind of based on a virus, rabies virus, right?
Oh, was it? I didn't know about that.
I thought so, because like if you contract rabies, you、kind of become violent and irrational,、
yeah.
and so it's like.The rabies virus mutated and turned people into zombies、mm-hmm. or something.
Mm-hmm. ウイルスって今知られてる中で何種類ぐらいあるものなんですか?
That's a very good question, and I think that's what I'm exactly working on.
Oh, okay.
で言うと多分かなり種の定義もいろいろとあるので難しいんですけど、個体数とかって言われてみるともう数千種ぐらいは知られてます。
その数千種の中でこう人間に悪さをするそれこそインフルエンザとかみたいなものは本当にもうごくごく一部っていうことですね、
はい、ただし、その見つかってるものの中でいうと割合はかなり高いです。なぜかというとそういうメディカルな人たちがいっぱい、人の病気を治すためという目的でいっぱいウイルスの管理をしているので、知られているものの中では実は はっきりとパーセンテージは分からないですけど例えば人以外にも動物だとか植物だとか、農業とか水産とかそういうのに関わりのあるものも含めるとざっと半分ぐらいかなと思いますけども実際の地球環境の中で動植物に 病気を起こすウイルスっていうのはおそらく 0.00001% もないと思います。
うん、だから見つかってないものがもうそれだけ大量にあるってことですよね。
はい、そういうことです。はい、
How many, like, as we're sitting here right now, I'm sure we're all breathing viruses and we're interacting with viruses and our viruses putting themselves in our genetic code or there's so, weird stuff they do, right?
I'm not from the medical background, so I don't really know what happens when we inhale those non-human, non-toxic viruses. Mm. They might be doing something, but my guess is that they're probably just becoming us nutrients because they're just pack of proteins and nucleic acid. I think they're healthy.
Are we going to have like virus drinks?
As long as it doesn't, you know, infect us.
Right.
Virus protein shake.
Yeah. But it might cost like, you know, $1,000.
So like a virus, like what is a virus specifically? Like the, because you see these pictures of these crazy moon lander looking, very machine-like.
Right.
Very sophisticated looking objects.
Right.
And they utilize geometric shapes and they're so ridiculously small.
Right.
So and they're really old too, right?
Yes, yes.
So what are they trying to do? And what are these things? Like, this is normal, right? They've always, this is totally normal. No one needs to
freak panic out about it. It's totally normal.
But there are these tiny,
like this for, そもそも何なの？これって何なの？っていう。Yeah.
It's a very sophisticated question, and I think even the smartest people on this planet don't really know the true answer for that. But it's just something that evolved, sort of like a byproduct of a biological evolution.
その代謝がないイコール、そうすると寿命みたいなものもないってことですか？
Some probably don't, but they can still sort of like degrade or be oxidized.
Ah, okay.
So that's what I meant by saying ウイルスが死んじゃった。
Mm.
So if you leave it at a bad condition for a while, then they will sort of die.
Yeah. Sort of. So they stop, like they're not active anymore.
Right, they can lose the function.
Okay.
But also the same for protein enzymes. Like, take whatever enzyme and you leave it at a bad temperature or something, and then they will lose the function. So the people who think the viruses are not alive, they consider them sort of like similar to protein enzymes.
Oh, okay.
So what's your argument against that? Why is it more alive than a protein enzyme?
They can still replicate.
Mm.
They do have their own genome sequence.
Mm.
So they're really right in the middle of a cell and a protein enzyme.
Mm.
And the size is also like sort of like in the middle as well.
Mm. だからこう人間の感覚として生き物か生き物じゃないかもう二択みたいな、なんか二択じゃないといけないみたいな感じで思ってるけど、まあ、その間
そうです
ってことですよね。
はい、
その今望月さんが培養されてその生やしてる、はい、ウイルスはどういうものなんですか？
私は本当にさっき言ったようにメディカル系とかそういうのは全くほとんど興味なくて、一応ウイルス学専門って言ってるんですけど、人のウイルスとかに関する知識はヤフーニュースぐらいしかで、逆にどういうものに興味があるかというと、最初にもちょっと言ったんですけど、生命の起源とかそっちに関心があるので、熱水系、今培養器はだいたい90度とかにセットしてるんですけども、そういうものすごい熱い熱湯の中で増える菌に感染するウイルスをやってます。
高井健さんご存知ですよね。
はいはい、
高井健さんもあれですよね、その熱水の、
そうです。
あ、そっか。
高井さんが私の上司です。
あ、そうなんですか？
はい、かつ研究室の先輩でもあります。
あ、そうなんだ。
大先輩です。
そっか、すごい。
Of course.
Yeah, of course. そっか。だからその 海の底の熱いところ、
私は今は、海よりもどっちかというと陸の温泉をやってます。なのであの日本はすごくいっぱい温泉があるので、あの そういう温泉地行って、あの源泉の方からちょっと水を取らせてもらって、あのそれを持ち帰って培養機で培養してっていう感じでやってます。
その温泉の水を持って帰ると何がいるんですか？
温度によっても変わってくるんですけども、例えば90度ぐらいで生えるものは、あの古細菌っていう、 It's called archaea、So all living organisms can be divided into three domains、We are eukaryotes、 真核生物 That includes animals, plants And also monocellular eukaryotes like amoeba and things like that. The ones that has the nucleus is called 真核生物 eukarya. And then they have bacteria, which doesn't have the nucleus. And there's also something called archaea. They don't have a nucleus, so for a long time, they were considered together as a group of bacteria. But this was something done in the 1970s. A guy named Carr Woos in America, he started something called molecular phylogeny. So you had, at that time, it wasn't necessarily the DNA sequence, but nowadays we use the DNA sequence. And taking the sequence of an enzyme that is conserved among all living organisms, and if you make a comparison, in reality, you just send the sequence in the computer and let the computer do the analysis. And then what we found out is that there is a clearly three distinctive domains, which are archaea, bacteria, and eukarya. And the kind of organism that live roughly above 90 degrees, it's more or less exclusively archaea. So I'm working on viruses infecting hyperthermophilic archaea.
Wow. で90度以下になると、そもそも寄生する先の生物が死んじゃうってことですか？
死んじゃうものもあるんですけども、あの大抵のものはあの4度とか常温とかに数日置いとくぐらいは大丈夫です。
Are you optimistic about Enceladus? And I mean, how are you feeling about these places?
So I'm personally not an expert on the geology of the Enceladus or anything, so I'm just speaking, hearing the things that's on the news and things like that. But I think there's a good chance that there's something there.
Yes.
Viruses?
Yeah, hopefully.
If we find a virus there, are they going to say that we haven't discovered extraterrestrial life?
The thing is, so this is something what we also mentioned in this astrobiology paper, but to be fair, to be honest, I think it's far more difficult to look for viruses than looking for cells, simply because they are far more smaller. So cells, you can observe them under the normal optical microscope, but viruses are roughly 100 times smaller than the cells. So you can't observe them under the optical microscope. So you need to have an electron microscope, which is far more larger and heavier, which I don't think is really suitable for the space expedition.
This topic of is it alive or not has come up a lot recently, but on the subject of artificial intelligence. Right? And
I may not be aware of that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, people are saying that if artificial intelligence can organize itself by performing this kind of a process of evolution inside of a computer, that it can kind of do this sustaining its complexity and replicating itself. And, you know, people make a lot of analogies between the viral nature of memes and the viral nature of genes and virus vectors, and the way that ideas spread are said to be very similar to the way that viruses can spread. Have you thought about this at all?
Not too much.
Not really. But what do you, like a virus is carrying a piece of information, right?
Right.
A little packet of data.
Yeah.
And it's hijacking a system to replicate that packet of data, make copies of that data, and then propagate that outwards. And each of those go out and infect more.
It does sound similar to what the actual viruses are doing, mm. but I'm not really too familiar with that kind of stuff. Sorry.
その望月さんが生やしてるウイルスは感染した後にその感染された側ってどうなるんですか？
いろいろですね。あの感染されると死んでしまう場合もありますし、あのものによってはあの特に私が一番最初に見つけたウイルスはあのずっと細胞と共感染みたいな共培養みたいなのができるので特に細胞が死んじゃったりとかいうことはなかったです。
そのウイルス側の観点からして感染させた相手が死なない方がいいわけですよね。
はい、多分本当はそうだと思います。あのウイルスたちもその感染した宿主細胞を殺したいから殺してるんではなくて結果的に死んじゃったっていう場合が多いのかなって思います。
そっか、うん、なるべく本当だったら共存した方がいいわけですもんね。
はい、
そっか。だから HPV みたいなことですよね。
HPV って何ですか？
あのヒトパピローマウイルスみたいな、はい、こう、はい、感染してるけど気づかなくて何十年もみたいなのが一番ウイルスとしては理想、は
い
は
い、かもしれない。
Yeah, it's so weird to think about the transmission strategies and this very difficult relationship that it has with the host. You know, you don't want to kill the host off before the host can spread you around as much as possible. Do you guys simulate how these viruses are transmitted or...
Only in some cases, but we do look into how the viruses enter the cell and exit the cells using very high spec electron microscopes.
その人間だとこう咳したりとかして他の人に移るじゃないですか。その温泉に住んでるような微生物の場合ってどういうふうに他者に感染していくんですか？
あの実際の現場で何が起きてるかっていうところまでは見れてないんですけども、まあ、多分水の流れに乗って、
あ、そっかそっか、水の中だからか、
うん、水の流れに乗って運よく相手を見つかるかどうか。
So some viruses are the cells that certain viruses are able to infect is quite specific.
Yes.、
Right?
Yes.
And so these virus species, would you, you call them species, they're specialists in a certain type of cell.
Right.
So are all these viruses kind of sitting in these evolutionary niches where they were able to capitalize on
it? I think so. I think that's what's exactly happening. Yeah.
もうその担当ってことですよね。
そうですね。And especially in those very high thermal environments, there are far less cell density. So their chances of finding their next host is much lower than sort of like the viruses in the normal seawater, lake water, or sediments and all that. So I think that's another reason why those thermophilic virusTend not to kill the host so much. That's what's being said.
そっか。なるべく長い間。え、その、例えば、感染してされた微生物が死んじゃった場合、外に放出されて、はい、どれぐらい生きてられるものなんですか?
So that's a very good question. In case of the virus that I found, the first virus that I found, we grow them at 90 degrees.So you assume that that's their sweet spot temperature. But what I found out is that when I isolated, purified just the viral particles and kept them at that 90 degrees, overnight they died. But that's their temperature.
Right.
Huh.
But on the other hand, you can leave them like for room temperature for a week or a month or something like that.
Huh. なんでそうなったんだろう?
I still don't have the clear answer yet, but that's also some interesting feature about the viruses. That the thing is that the virology in those non-human area, especially like in these extreme environments, mm. there are very, very little people who are working on those in the world.
Right. Mm.
And I think there's only about 5 labs or something in total in the whole world
Whoa.
That are working specifically on those thermal viruses.
めっちゃレアなんですね、じゃあ望月さんは。そうです。
What, are there any, are the characteristics of those thermal viruses generally different from like their appearance and their size?
Thank you for asking that. I was waiting for that. Hmm. So, like you said earlier, is it working?
Sorry, my...
Okay.
My left ear, I can't hear it. なんか接続がおかしい。
Is that okay now? No? Can no. you hear?
Not working.
But it is recorded fine, right? It's just my headphone? Okay. Oh, yeah, it's back. Yeah, thank you. Sorry, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Yes.
So you mentioned earlier that viruses have that head and tail, sort of like the lunar module kind of structure.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
That's the kind of viruses that you would easily find from normal environments. And those are the viruses infecting the bacteria. Mm. And they're like everywhere. It is said that that those head and tail viruses like are more than 95% of the whole entire bacterial virusphere. Huh. But if you go into those hot water environments and look for archaeal viruses, mm. and this is a printout that I brought, and you have all viruses with all kinds of different morphologies.
Huh. Oh, wow. え、なんかかわいいのがある。
でしょ?
なんかお花みたいな。
The one that are circled in black lines are the ones that I found myself.
The ones that you found yourself.
Yes.
Wow. What is this?
Yeah, so I think that's the most interesting one, the bottle-shaped virus.
なんかクジラみたい。
It really looks like a...
It looks like a wine bottle.
Yeah, wine
yeah.
bottles.
Yeah. ワインボトルの下のとこになんかギザギザみたいなのがついてる。
はい。瓶の底に当たるところにちょっと毛が生えたりとか。
このお花みたいなやつはこれはこれで一つの
いや、それはあの そのお花の花びらみたいなのが一つ一つのウイルス
ですあそうなんだ、うん、それがお花の形に集結してるってこと
そうです、はい、So they organize in this way?
So what I think is that this lemon shaped virus have two different ends. One is a sticky end and the other is not a sticky end. So when you have the sticky ends sort of like gathered together, huh. I think they form this Rosetta kind of structure.
Interesting. What about this little bomb looking, what are these guys down here? The Globuloviridae.
So that's a spherical virus with a little bit of a appendage, sort of like a tentacle kind of thing.
Hmm. 面白い.
So this shape has something to do with how they interact with what they're trying to infect, right?
Yes, there's some supposedly. We don't know about most of these yet.
Hmm.
It's interesting. Because
there are so little people working on these viruses.
Hmm. じゃあこのギザギザが何のために生えてるとかも分かんない。
確かこれは宿主にひっつく側だったと思うんですけどもこのビール瓶の底の方がくっつくのか口の方がくっつくのかちょっと忘れてしまったんですけど
じゃあ基本なんかそのベタベタした側っていうか部分があるのもが結構多いんですか
そうですね比較的あの細胞に感染するときにひっつく用の あのタンパク質をどっかの表面にはつけてるみたいです。But this bottle-shaped virus, it came from, I don't remember the exact location, but I think it was Yellowstone National Park in America.
Oh.
But this condition is roughly 80 degrees, pH 2. Huh. So it's like a boiling acid.
Yeah.
Literally a boiling acid. And first of all, there are living organisms, the cells there. Mm. And also there are viruses infecting those cells. And it's really those, only these hyperthermophilic viruses, archaeal viruses, that have so much morphological diversity.
Mm.
And since we believe that those thermophiles have a very strong relationship with the origin of life, so we're also assuming that these weird-looking, bizarre viruses also should have had some sort of significant importance in the, maybe not the origin itself, but the early evolution of life.
Wow.
There's just a dozen of these on this sheet, but they're all different.
Mm-hmm.
And they must all have different strategies. And how many, there are more viruses than anything else, pretty much, right?
Yes.
And so the sheer variety of structures and just the amount of information that exists at this nanometer level
right.
is really mind-blowing.
すごいね。だからこれとか、この AFV1 っていうやつ。
はい。これも
なんか手みたいなのがついてますよね。
これもさっきのボイリングアシッドと同じ環境で取られ
てます。あ、そうなん。
It looks like a claw of some insect or something.
There's
look,
so many.
They look nasty.
It seems like there's so many. There's so many viruses, different viruses that you could find a shape for, like for most objects. That we've made.
Yeah, that's true.
I always wanted to get something that has a more visual impact than this bottle-shaped virus, but so far I haven't found anything that looks more bizarre, but...
There's plenty left.
Yes, right? Yes.
Wow.
There's so little that we know.
Wow. でもこの、なんか普通に長細いだけのやつとかも、なんか、これはこれで意味が分からないというか不思議ですよね。
綺麗ですよ。
ね。何これ何これって感じ。
Have you seen any of those robotic looking ones, moonlander types, in these environments?
In this environment, no. But we know that those, we call them the head and tail virus, they also exist not only in the bacterial domain, also in archaeal domains, but those are found from halophilic archaea, which are archaeal cells that live in saturated salt environment. So that's also an example of the extremophile environment, because we use salt to preserve food so that there's no bacteria growing in your food.
Yeah.
Right.
But even in the saturated salt, even actually, you can also find those halophiles from the surface of the rock salt as well. So those head and tail viruses have been found from those halophilic archaea and also methanogenic archaea, which are the ones that produces methane in an environment that doesn't have any oxygen, like in the swamp sediment or... Sweden, the rice field sediment, you can also find those methanogenic archaea, and they also have the head and tail viruses, but not a single one from thermophilic environment.
その人間から考えると考えられないような過酷な状況下でもサバイブできる細胞がまずあって、はい、そこに感染できるウイルスがいるっていう二段
そういうことです。はい。
仕込みみたいなことですよね。はい。
And this whole process is based around genetics,
right?
Right. It's these little shapes, and all of these little shapes here are like carrying a piece of genetic code, right?
Right. They have their own genome sequence.
And so the world just has a bunch of little pieces of code floating around. And
right. And they are really, really diverse, more diverse than the diversity that you can find in cellular organisms, because each of these have different genome sequence. And in principle, there's no genes that are shared among all viruses. In the case of the cellular organism, like even us humans and the most primitive E. coli, which is bacteria, there are still several hundred genes or enzymes that are shared, which are called the universal genes. But in the case of the viral world, there's not a single gene that is shared among all of the viruses.
Wow.
What?
Do we know that the viruses are related to each other, or we just don't know? Or
so for cells, we believe that it had a common ancestor, which dates back to roughly 3 or 4 billion years ago. But for viruses, nobody knows if it ever had a common ancestor. I think a lot of people believe that they did not have a common ancestor. So they just popped out periodically.
もうバラバラってことですか?
Is there a... So this code that is inside this... It's a protein capsule, right? What's the nature of this code? How long is the code? Is it very complex code? I mean, there must be some minimum length of code before it's meaningless, right?
Right. So that's also a very good point. If you look at the genome sequence of cells, the minimum is roughly several hundred kilobases. And the largest, like, for example, us humans, we have 3 billion base pairs. And for the viruses, the smallest one is roughly 2,000 or 3,000 bases. So 2 kilo, 3 kilo, that's sort of like the minimal size. And the largest is something which I consider as one of the biggest findings in the 21st century virology, is that roughly, I think it was like 15 years ago, some group of scientists in France, they found a gigantic, gigantic virus that are larger than some of the smallest cells.
Whoa.
And they kept getting new world record for the biggest viruses. And now I think the biggest is 2.5 megabase, which is larger than most prokaryotic organisms. And you can see them under the optical microscope.
And what do they infect?
They infect amoeba, which is unicellular eukaryotes.
What are they doing with all that long code?
A lot of people are working on it. They still don't know why they just got so gigantically big. But even for
it's
that
scary.
One, even for that one, they had an origin ancestor, which was far more smaller. And for some reason, just that particular group of viruses, they just kept on getting larger, larger, larger. And now it's a gigantic monster-sized viruses.
So there was there was an advantage to increasing the complexity of that code.
But that's a little bit like an exception. In most cases, the sort of like the viruses that you can find in other normal environments that are roughly several kilos or several dozen kilos.
There must be some downside to having such carrying a longer code, right?
Yeah. Because if you have more genetic information, it costs more energy to produce to make a copy. So having smaller genomes are usually a better aspect for viruses, but just in that particular case of those gigantic viruses, they just got bigger and bigger ridiculously.
なんか今ふとなんでそこまでして増えたいんだろうって思っちゃったんですけど、それは人間もでも同じですよね。
多分そこまでして増えちゃったものだけが残ったのかもしれないです。
Is that true for everything here on Earth, or is it
like what are we all
just
doing?
The underlying who knows what it is, but like in the ether, in physics, like evolution, mm-hmm. in physics, there has to be something like that to explain how we get from just inorganic matter to organic matter, or at least more complex matter. Like, what do you make of the self-assembling RNA issue? Like, how did we get two RNA and how did we get two DNA? Like,
so RNA is believed to have formed in an abiotic world with just simple chemical evolution. Mm. And nowadays, every cellular organism, at least, they use DNA as their genetic material. Mm-hmm. And nobody has a clear answer on how DNA was made. Mm-hmm. But my former supervisor, named Patrick Fortier in France, he believes that it was the viruses who invented the DNA molecule in those RNA world,
like, really?
Several billion years ago.
That's like the, what do they call it? Virus evolution theory or something like that, right?
That may have a different meaning.
Because I was trying to Google, because I was curious about evolution of the virus itself, and I was mm-hmm. trying to Google it. But then if you put the word evolution and virus, mm-hmm. all the results are like, そもそもその生き物の進化自体にウイルスが絡んでるんじゃないかみたいなばっかりが出てきて、
生命の起源がウイルスだったかってことですかね。
いや、なんかそのウイルスに感染することによっていろんな生き物の進化が影響を受けてきたみたいなっていうことですよね。
そうですね、ホリゾンタルジーントランスファーの遺伝子の水平伝播っていうんですけども、あのウイルスの方の遺伝子が宿主の細胞に水平伝播して、それによって宿主が新しい遺伝子を獲得するっていうメカニズムはかなり昔から知られていて、例えば哺乳類もとあるウイルスが起源になって胎盤を形成する遺伝子ができたっていうのは、あのほぼ証明されてるらしいです。
じゃあもともと胎盤が
なかった頃にとある RNA ウイルスが感染して
胎盤なしで妊娠出産してたってこと。
その辺 の, あの哺乳類じゃない生き物がどうやって増えるのかあんまりよくわかんないんですけど、
不思議すぎる。そもそもウイルス自体は、例えばその今ってこう人間が抗生物質とか薬を飲みすぎるためにこうウイルスとか細菌が耐性を持っちゃってこう進化するみたいな聞くじゃないですか。こういう自然界でもそういう進化、なんだろう、その人間に関係ないところでもウイルスって進化してるものなんですか。
は
い、
で今あの抗生物質 の, たあの耐性菌がいっぱい問題になってると思うんですけども、
はい、
それをウイルスを使って病原菌を殺そうっていう研究もされてます。そもそもウイルスが最初に発見されたあの20世紀前半とかはそういう観点での研究がメインだったらしいんですけども、あの抗生物質が発見されてからもうそれがあの魔法の薬みたいな感じでどこでも使われる、簡単に全ての菌に基本効くので、あの魔法の薬みたいな感じで使われるようになって、バクテリアを宿主とするウイルス、ファージって呼ぶんですけど、ファージの研究は一旦廃れたんですけども、うん、最近あのその多剤薬性菌とかが出てきてるので、ウイルス使ってあの病気を治そうっていう研究もされてますし、実際あのヨーロッパの方の、ジョージア、昔グルジアでしたけど、ジョージアっていう国では今でもずっとファージがあの薬局で配られてるそうです。なんで病気というか、あのなんか感染症とかになって病院行ってあの薬くださいって言ったら、あのファージのカクテルを処方される、今でもずっとされるそうです。
ウイルスを摂取して細菌を殺す、
はい
はい、それはそのかかってしまった細菌に感染するウイルスを摂取するってことですよね。
はい、 なのでそれはもう完全にその菌にしか効かないので、我々あの人にももちろん悪いあの影響はないし、さらに例えばあの飲んで飲み薬として飲んだ場合でもあの腸内細菌とかはやられないので、
うん、あ、そっかそっかそっか、
はい、あの抗生物質のもう一つ あの悪い点は腸内細菌がもう一緒にやられちゃうということなので、それをウイルスだったらあのピンポイントで、
そっか、
治せるっていうので結構研究もされてます。
面白い。
That would be great because
actually in America the FDA has already approved using bacterial viruses, phages as food additives.
Really?
Already like 10 years ago.
Huh. As food
to prevent
additives.
Food poisoning.
Oh, 面白い。すごいね。そもそも望月さんはなんでこの研究をされようと思ったんですか？
もともとこ の, あの生命の起源とかに興味を持つようになったきっかけは、私が中学の時にあの90年代中頃ですけども、 NASA が火星の隕石から微生物の化石っぽいものを見つけたっていうニュースがあって、でその時に、あ、微生物っていう観点で見たら地球外生命体っているかもしれないって思って、だからずっと高校の時とかちょうどその頃はあのアメリカがあのなんだっけ、マースパスファインダーっていう、あのバイキングが1970年代に火星に行って、それからしばらくずっと火星探査なかったんですけど、90年代にマースパスファインダーっていうのが約20年ぶりぐらいに行って、もう毎日なんか普通のニュースとかで火星 の, あの写真が流れてくるようなそういう時にあの高校時代だったんですけども、高校時代はずっと NASA に行って生物学をやりたいと思ってたんですけど、だんだんだんだん興味の対象が火星の生命から地球の生命の起源になって、それで大学の時とかもあのこの熱水系の研究室に入って、高井さん の, あの その当時は全然会ったこともなかったんですけども、
はい、
同じ研究室であのそういう研究がいっぱいされてたので、熱水系の微生物に興味を持って、でいざ熱水系の微生物の研究で何やるかってなった時に、自分の中でなんかパッとくるものがなかったんですね、
はい、
だけどその当時研究室配属になった4年生の多分春の4月か5月の時に教授の先生と研究テーマどうするかっていう話になった時に、こういう熱水系の古細菌がいっぱいいるところには古細菌のウイルスもおるんやろうなとかって言った瞬間になんかビビッとくるものを感じて、でそれでいろいろと論文とか調べてみると、こんなになんか見たこともない形のものがいっぱいあって、だけどやってる人がほとんどいなくて、
Why isn't anyone helping
I don't know.
You want there to be more people yeah. interested in
it. Yeah, but so far, it's nice to be the only guy who knows about this field.
確かに。
At the beginning, it was really difficult because I couldn't get any sort of like suggestion or anything for doing the experiments and all that. So I just have to go through the literature and just trying to do the same thing as the others were doing.
Wow.
So at the beginning, it was really tough, but... Now I kind of know how to do things, and I think I'm getting better and better with growing these viruses. And so far, I'm enjoying where I am.
すごいね。レアキャラ。
You think that there are viruses on other planets? And
I think
and
so.
Is it a universal thing? Or?
So that's also a very important issue. So like we talked earlier that... Even in other terrestrial bodies, like, for example, Enceladus, we believe that there probably are living organisms, but we don't know if they still use the same system as we do, like using DNA, RNA, and proteins. Maybe they're using something totally different. But if even in those other planets, if they are still using DNA, RNA, and proteins, the same system, then there probably will be... something similar to the viruses that we know, and also that will can also sort of say that how our life on this planet Earth started was not necessarily a miracle. But at this point, we don't have anything to compare. It's only the earth life that we know.
Right.
And we don't know a single exception.
Mm.
And once we find one single exception, and now we get to compare it with the earth life, and then right. we'll probably have a better idea of how life started on this planet as well.
Mm.
Would we be able to tell if it was contamination from our planet, or if it was like an original alien virus?
I think that'll be very, very difficult to tell.
Mm. Unless it's super wacky or something. Or...
Yeah.
We know so little about the viruses on Earth. That, I mean, have we really made an effort to see whether there are viruses on other planets or not?
Not necessarily. It's simply because it's too hard to look for viruses. Mm. They're just simply too smaller, and we don't even have a single proof of extraterrestrial cells, which in theory are supposed to be easier to look for. So we're not there yet.
Mm.
We've taken viruses to other planets for sure, right? Almost certainly, right?
Almost certainly.
Mars, Jupiter,
I'm not sure about
Venus.
Jupiter, but are you talking about the sort of like the NASA exploration, or are you... talking about sort of like a meteorite?
Our probes that we've sent out there, and, you know, they just fly it into the planet at the end.
So the artificial ones.
Our artificial probes that we sent from Earth, a place that, you know, has viruses sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't show up with no viruses when it gets there, right?
It is said that when NASA, I'm not a NASA person, so I'm just talking about what I heard, is that... I hear that NASA is trying to build their rovers and everything in a cell-free environment, which doesn't have any contamination of a bacterial or virus or whatever. But
is it virus-free environment, or is that
microbe-free?
Is there such thing as a virus-free environment on Earth? Has anyone ever built a room where you can walk in? It's like there's zero viruses in here.
Maybe not as big as a room, but just for example, take a glass bottle or something, and you keep it in a very hot environment chamber. Like if you heat it up to like 300, 400 degrees, then even those thermophilic viruses, they can't stand that temperature. So that bottle will be completely free of living virus, but there's still the remnants of those proteins and DNAs and all that.
なんかその NASA が他の惑星をコンタミネートしないために結構そのステライライしたりとか頑張ってるじゃないですか。逆にそのあっちからこっちに持ってきちゃわないためのガイドラインってあるんですかね。
あるらしいです。
あ、そうなんだやっぱり。だってすごい謎の変なとんでもないのがいる可能性もあるってことですもんね。そのなんか今人類が想像もできないようななんかウイルスとか。
なのであのまだ全然実現はしてないですけども、実際に火星とかからあのサンプルを持って帰るってなったら、多分完全な密閉された空間の中で全て作業をするようになると思います。
These viruses areSome of them are as small as like 20 nanometers,
yes.
Right? Is that as small as they go, or they're...
Roughly, yes. 15 or 20 seems to be the smallest limit.
Why is that?
Too small.
They have to have a certain size of the genome, DNA or RNA, and pack them into a shell. So that's probably their smallest limit. Yes. Uh-huh.
But that's a lot. They're storing a decent amount of information in a very small space, right? Could we store movies on, like, I mean, how many viruses, that super big virus, you know, how much data can we, is it actually carrying, you know?
So that's a megabase size information.
Yeah.
They can still sort store several kilobase or several I don't know if it goes up to megabase, but several hundred kilobase, you can store them, not necessarily in a virus, but in like E. coli or yeast mm-hmm. by genetic engineering.
なんか望月さんの研究のゴールというか、なんかこういうのを見つけたいとか、こういうことが分かりたいみたいなのって。
One goal is, so we've been talking about DNAs and RNAs, mm. and I've also mentioned that the viruses in these hyperthermophilic environment is very, very diverse with different morphology and different genome sequence and all that. But there has not been a single RNA virus found from these thermal environments. Mm. So I'm personally looking for those RNA viruses from these hot springs. And whether they exist or not, I think it has a very important thing with how to deal with the origin of life. Because life is believed to have started in a thermophilic RNA world.
Mm.
And RNA molecules are generally very, very fragile compared to DNA, especially in these thermal environments, hot temperature environments. They're very, very fragile.
Mm.
But if there is no single RNA virus in these hot environments in modern Earth, then I think it's kind of difficult to assume that life started in an RNA world. Because mm-hmm. nowadays, biology has a way to sort of like protect your DNAs and RNAs. But at that time when life started, there was nothing to help to preserve the RNA molecule. And if it doesn't exist, if the thermophilic RNA virus doesn't exist on modern life, modern Earth, then I think it's very difficult to imagine that that was the way things started 4 billion years ago.
Hmm.
What would be your best guess as to how things did start? I mean, assuming we don't really have a clear, detailed picture right now, hot earth.
There are some things I have in mind, but I don't think I'm allowed to speak it here.
Oh,
why?
Well, just speculate.
Yeah, it's just speculation.
For a lot of us, we just have no clue. We're just like, okay, so there was nothing alive, or there was no DNA or RNA, and then there was DNA and RNA. You know, and it's very confusing.
Even for this modern day thermophilic world, nobody has a clear answer whether the RNA virus exists or not.
Mm.
There are some people who are trying to look for it by using a technology called metagenomics, which is taking the environmental sample and extract the DNA or RNA, send them directly into the sequencer, and then you can get the sequence reads. And there are some people who are trying to look for RNA virus from thermophilic environment using that, and actually some people said that they found it from the hot spring in Yellowstone. But the problem is with using metagenomics, you never know what the true host is. It could always be something that contaminated into your sample from nowhere. And true they found in those Yellowstone samples, it was a sequence that was unfamiliar with any of the known RNA virus, but it could just still be something that contaminated, which we didn't know about. And it's nearly impossible to pinpoint just by looking at the viral sequence to guess what the host organism is. But nowadays, really, a lot of people are going into metagenomics. It's really the cutting edge science. But I'm sort of like doing very much the opposite, and I call it the old school science. And I'm kind of proud of doing that. And I'm just going back to what people have been doing decades ago, taking samples, grow them in your incubators, and try to look for something that nobody has found. And so far, I have been finding quite a lot of unknown viruses. So at least with these thermal environments, working with hyperthermophilic archaea, it's still possible to get new viruses that are completely unrelated to what we know, what exists in the database.
And these, the RNA version of these viruses would be smaller and more difficult to find?
My guess is that it's smaller because generally RNA virus tends to be smaller than DNA viruses.
So it's not surprising that you haven't found one yet necessarily because they could be much harder to find.
Yes.
And there are not that many people looking for it either, in the world.
Yeah. I think there's only like 5 people in the world.
Oh my God.
Literally.
So you must know who they all are.
Yes, I kind of know all the names.
With your old school method, are you skeptical of some of the work that's been done with viruses using artificial intelligence, where people have reported using artificial intelligence to discover like 6,000 viruses at once?
I'm not familiar with the artificial intelligence works, but I know some of the people who claim to have found new viruses by metagenomics. And I think most of them are true, actually. But still, like I said, it's nearly impossible to pinpoint what the host is. Even at the domain level, whether it's infecting bacteria or archaea or eukaryotes, it's nearly impossible to tell.
So it's kind of, it's like partial credit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, yeah, you found the virus, but we don't know the host, and we don't really know anything else about it that you would have learned if you had done the old school method.
What my personal conclusion from all those metagenomic analysis is that we have to go back to the cultivation, which is sort of like considered as really old school, and a lot of people thought that you can't get so many completely unknown viruses from the environmental sample anymore. But if you take the viral sample and do metagenomics, you end up getting like roughly 70% of unknown sequences.
Do you find the same if you're at a particular nice onsen and you take a sample and you find certain viruses, if you take another sample of the same place the next day, do you get more or less the same?
So that's sample? Also, I consider doing virus hunting sort of like an art, because like you said, if you take the sample just one day later, there's a very good chance that you will get something completely different. So science is something supposed to be repeatable. But in my personal view, virus isolation is really not the case. Once you get them, then everything else, like the DNA analysis and protein analysis, those are repeatable. But at the time when you take the samples and put them into your test tubes and flasks and start growing something, that's absolutely not unrepeatable.
Wow. だ撮ってる時毎回ちょっとワクワクする感じってことですよね。今日は何が撮れるかなみたいな。
It's like a loot box.
すごいベーシックな質問なんですけど、その90度のサンプルを撮って、それをどこに入れるっていうか、その90度を保たないといけない。
持って帰るときはもう常温で持って帰ってます。
あ、そうなんだ。
もしかしたら理想としては90度保った方がいいのかもしれないんですけど、ちょっと現実的に難しいので、もう常温か逆に冷蔵して送ってます。
Does this vary dramatically between like prefectures or like if you like how does it where are the how are the viruses located? Geographically,
generally, if you go to hot springs with nearly the same temperature, pH, no matter where you go in the world, you get something quite similar.
So it's really that local environment and what that's like that's more important than like whether those viruses have made it out to that area or not.
So whether I get the samples from eastern Japan and western Japan, it's more or less the same,
mm-hmm.
but I do consider the very basic chemical status, like the temperature and mm-hmm. pH, quite seriously.
But are there contained like virus ecosystems, or like these viruses are only here and they
have? Like endemic 的なものはないんですけど、なんか固有種みたいな。
Yeah, Madagascar virus.
そう、なんかこのウイルスはここの温泉にしかいないとか、日本にしかいないとか。
今のところそれは見つかってないですけども、まあ、例えばさっきのこの、あのワインボトル型、これまだ一種しか見つかってないんで、そもそも。なんでもしかしたらこれは、これイエローストーンだったのかアイスランダーだったのかちょっと覚えてないんですけど、もしかしたら固有種の可能性もなきにしもあらずですけど、
でも逆に言うと環境が同じだったら離れていても同じものが見つかるってことは、はい、どういうふうに広がった、
すごくいい質問なんですけど個人的な予想では多分大気中を漂って広がってるんじゃないかなと思います、
うん、
それしかつながり方がない
という
か、
そうですよね、
例えば日本とアメリカみたいなすごくあの地球レベルで距離が離れているところでも禁煙種が見つかるの でそれがもちろん地下をつながってっていうこともありえますけど、まあ、多分その熱水の環境とかはその地下の中ではまたあの太平洋とかでも全然変わってきているので、となると彼らが行き来して広がるには多分空気に乗ってしかないんじゃないかなと、
じゃあふわふわしてるうちにこう行き着いた先でたまたま生きれたやつが、
はい、広がるんじゃないかなと、
So it's not like,
不思議すぎる。
It's not like being on an airplane puts you above the viruses or something, you know? They're floating around up there.
Yeah, I think
they're
so small. Yeah.
I saw a paper the other day, なんか海の波がジャパンってなるたんびにその水の中のウイルスが外に出てふわって舞ってるみたいな、ありましたね、最近。
十分あり得ると思います。
Isn't there like a million viruses per milliliter of ocean water or something?
Right.
だから見えないからいいけど、見えてたらすごいことになってるってことですよね。
A million in a milliliter。
だって海ちょっと入って水ちょっとでも飲み込んだらもう。
So they don't move or wiggle or anything like that, do they? Are they
basically
moving?
No.
They don't have their own motility.
Generally, no.
So they're just going with the flow.
Yeah.
Have we found ones that do?
So there was one example, actually, this one here called the Bicota Verde HEV. This was found, I think, around 2005 or 6 or something, and it was reported in Nature because it was the first example that viruses were changing their morphology outside their host.
Ooh.
So this, originally when it gets out from the host cell, it has the lemon-like structure, just like this one. But only with time and temperature, eventually they start growing these tails. And roughly about a week later, they start to be like this.
So these viruses undergo some kind of metamorphosis?
Yes.
And where does the information for that come from?
So the interesting thing about this finding is that it didn't require ATP, which is normally used for as an energy source. It doesn't require ATP. It doesn't require any kind of additional protein or amino acid or anything. It's just the temperature and the time. So just keep it in pure water. I think it also happened even in pure water. Just keep it at... so that these guys were found at roughly 70, 80 degrees. Keep them in pure water. Keep them in that temperature. And then that will happen. So all the things that they need to do this morphological change is already within their particle when they were released from the host cell. And as far as I know, this is sort of like the only example of virus changing
so there's
their
some,
morphology.
There's some potential energy in
yes,
them
yes,
in that
yes,
virus particle.
Yes.
でこれはそのこのレモン状のからこう棒みたいなのが伸びてくるわけですよね、はい、その棒みたいなのが伸びることによって例えば感染しやすくなるってこと？
おそらくそうじゃないかと考えられています。あの棒が長くなることによってあの単純に相手の細胞にくっつくチャンスも増えるんじゃないかって、
mm-hmm. So are they competing? They're competing amongst themselves as well, mm-hmm. right? The, mm-hmm. the lemon looking virus that grows the longest stick will have the best chance of
Maybe.
propagating.
Yep.
And are there differences between each virus particle? Or there's got to be some variation amongst
them? Slight variation might, yeah, it might be there. But in theory, they all have the same genetic information.
So the variation would be a result of some epigenetic?
Or it could be the mistranslation when the translation happens from RNA to protein.
So they just leverage some mutagenic variation caused by their environment?
Mm-hmm. And luck,
probably. For example, this...ベタベタしてる面が全体を覆ってる方がくっつきやすいとか、なんかそのこのウイルスよりこのウイルスの方がそういう意味で強いというか感染力が高いとか、こうなんか 差がある、なんだろう、これこそ最強のウイルスの形みたいな。
But they're infecting different things, right?
So It's very difficult to say, but there are a lot of viruses with icosahedral structure. 正二重面体.
正二重面体. Okay.
So it exists in all three domains in eukarya, bacteria, and archaea.
Huh.
And only one is known from archaea, but even in bacteria, the head and tail viruses, the head part,is made from the icosahedral structure, and that's where they keep their genetic information. And in eukaryal viruses, that's very, very well known. So I think...
What's the advantage of that?
One advantage is that it doesn't have any ends. So just like what you said, all faces of the structure are equally, so no matter which side they bump into the cell surface, they always have the good chance of sticking with the cells.
Huh. Huh. The ones that have the lander legs, they need to land with the legs first.
Right. They attach to the cells with their tails.
じゃあ頭が当たっちゃったらスティックできない?
I don't think it will infect.
そっか。
Yeah.
Huh. And so the How many legs are there? Six legs?
I don't know the exact number, but I think it was somewhere around six.
And they like stab their the ends of those legs.
So the what we call the tail structure, which is like the core part after the icosahedral head, they use that as sort of like a syringe to penetrate the cell wall of the bacteria and insert their genetic material. Mm. And even with those head and tail viruses, some have those feet-like, leg-like structure, but some don't.
Hmm.
Huh.
So it's more of the rod-shaped tail part that does the trick. And these legs are just facilitating to attach to the cell.
Are they just helping maybe to line it up more perpendicular?
Maybe, yeah.
So they inject genetic material that turns into one of them?
They insert the genetic material from the head part and use this rod tail part and...
Inject.
Can we go through the what actually happens once they... So they...
Yeah.
They land, and they're perpendicular to the cell surface.
Mm-hmm.
It is kind of like landing on a planet,
right? Exactly.
And then they inject this genetic material, either RNA or DNA.
In the case of these head and tail viruses, they're all exclusively DNA viruses.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then how does that, what interaction takes place once the genetic material is inside the cell?
So once they insert the DNA, the genome of the virus, then the proteins from the host cell will start to replicate those DNAs. Hmm. And also the host cells, the RNA polymerase from the host cell will start to make the messenger RNAs based on the DNA sequence.
So this is something it already does anyways, right?
Yes. So they're just simply hijacking all the systems or the enzymes from the cell.
But they can make multiple copies with one cell, right?
Right.
How many copies are they?
That varies with the virus. So that's also a very good example of a great difference between cells and viruses. Mm. So cells basically divide. So one becomes two, two becomes four becomes eight. But in the case of viruses, one viral cycle can end up having 10, 20 viral particle at once.
Mm.
Whoa.
So it can go from 1 to 20x in, from the infection of a single cell.
Yes.
And then each of those 20 could infect cells and generate another 20. Mm-hmm. So the rate of propagation is much higher than with cells.
Exactly. So I think that's why they end up being the most abundant biological entity. That's what we call it. Mm. Because there are roughly 100 times more virus than the cells.
Mm. Oh, okay.
ちょっと、どうぞ。落ちてきたと思います。